This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I am the newest little transplant in the garden of Charlie Dobbin, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Good morning, Dean. I'm well, but I almost feel like I need my seatbelt on. It is so windy here. I'm just like, whoa.
Well, I actually have a theory. My theory is that all of the snow that fell on my front yard yesterday is now in your front yard.
Could be right.
It's just blown all the way across the province.
It is definitely moving around. I mean, who could even bother to clear snow today, because it's just going to blow in again, right?
Yeah. So, of course, I'm at my home studio in Collingwood, Ontario, and you are in Prince Edward County. And the trusty Carlos is at Zoomerplex. And so, so during the course of the show, the snow that falls here will zip by Carlos and end up at your place by 10 o'clock.
How
you been?
So do give everyone the phone numbers, and then I will jump in with some thoughts about the great backyard bird count.
Fabulous. I will do the deed. Yes. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. Please let Carlos know if you are a first-time caller, because we will give you your garden wings, well-earned. And the mantra, of course, call often, call early, and one question per call, please. There you go.
Wonderful.
So you participated in the bird count, did you?
Well, it's actually on right now.
Oh, that's right. It is. Right. It's this weekend.
Because it started, I'm going to say it started yesterday. It did start yesterday. So it's on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I believe I'm correct on that. Very easy to participate. Day like today, I don't know how many birds. I guess if you get into kind of a sheltered or forested area, it might be possible to count some birds. It's a 15-minute window anytime over the next 4 days, as many times as you wish. Counting the quantity, obviously the number of birds you see in that 15 minutes, but also the variety. So being able to identify what varieties are flying around. So what is interesting for me is, and I've never seen this before, I saw it on Wednesday before the bird count started, was a flock of robins flew into my backyard.
Oh, Mike, at this time of year.
Well, number one, I haven't seen robins all winter, though I know we are seeing them more and more in the winter. But they must have come across from the States, because this is a bit of a migratory path where I live.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a flock. Like, there was at least 30 or more robins all together.
Really? And did you see that on one of the days of the count? Like, could you report that?
Well, technically not, because I saw it when it was really mild, when all that rain was happening, and the birds were like down in the watery back part of my garden, dancing and prancing and swimming and bathing and drinking and having a grand old time. But it's just I've never seen robins in such large, like, a quantity like that. So that to me was quite unusual.
Yeah, those robins in the rain. What a saucy fellow, eh?
I guess.
Yeah. There you go. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll get to some calls, we'll get to some emails, and we'll get this show on the road. We'll be right back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I'm going to give those numbers again. Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario. We'd love to chat with you. Toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Now, Charlie.
I was just going to say, because we would love questions, obviously, any questions that anybody has, love to hear them, but also tips, techniques, things that are going on. Things that have worked well, you know, happy to hear from people.
That's right. Yeah, sometimes people call in and they enlighten the field of gardening, don't they, a little bit?
They do. Well, you know what? There's art and there's science to gardening. No question about that.
Right. Indeed. I've got an email for you, Charlie.
Okay.
This is from Cheryl. And she says, Charlie, heard your radio show for the first time today. I met you many years ago at Canada Blooms. I used to be an interior horticultural technician with Outdoor Images in St. Catharines, but I retired due to an injury. My question is whether I can fix a mistake I made. I purchased a package of hyacinth bulbs last fall, but in the midst of some renovations, they got misplaced and were not found until this week. The bulbs are still nice and hard, but have an inch of green growth coming up. What do I do with them? As I know it's too late to force them, which I have never done before, but much too early to plant outside, of course. They'd probably blow away, especially under 2 feet of snow. We had over 4 feet last week, and most of St. Catharines, the most seen in St. Catharines since I moved here in 96, and very cold. Okay, so there you go.
Okay, so, you know, this is a great email because this is a great question. It does seem to happen quite consistently to absolutely everybody. Even though I remind everybody in the fall, look around, find your bulbs, get them planted. Don't forget them. Everybody every now and then does lose a bag. So what do you do? Now, she said they are starting to grow. Now, what I would suggest, she said they're in good condition. They're firm. They're alive. So, Cheryl, I know you think it's too late to force them, but personally, what I would do if I found a bag right now that the bulbs are firm, they're healthy, they've got little growth starting, I would pot them up. And of course, when we pot up bulbs into a pot, we plant them basically right on the surface of the soil, which is different from it when we go into the ground where we go down several inches below the surface. So, you know, whatever you need, a 6-inch, 8-inch pot, fresh, moist potting soil, get them into the ground, into the pot, on the surface, so your little sprouts will be above ground, above soil level. And then a bit of water, right, just to make sure that you're moist. And then I would go into a dark, cool location, if you have that. Mm-hmm. So the dark, cool might be, it depends where they were. They obviously were cool where she had them, but I'm not sure whether they were in the dark or the light. So if they're green now, they were obviously in the light. So she might have to leave them in that same cool, bright spot where they've been. And the reason I'm assuming they were in the cool is if they were in a really warm spot, they would be mush by now. So best case scenario, particularly if those sprouts are white, because they've been in the dark, is just put them in a bag, dark plastic bag, and put them in the fridge or back to a nice cool spot. So you want them, you know, 10 degrees, 8 degrees, that sort of Celsius degrees. You may not get flowers this year, but still put them away. If they insist on growing, of course, you might only put them away for 2 or 3 weeks or so. Get them out when, if they're really, you know, perking along, wanting to grow, get them in the sun at that point, window ledge, enjoy them as green plants. They, like I said, they may not flower this year, but whatever, by letting them grow, they will be, stay alive and fatten up again, and then you'll get them into the garden at the end of the summer at some point in the fall or the summer, and you'll enjoy them outdoors in the spring of 2023. So, you know, rather than composting them, I would certainly try planting them and keeping them going with the intention to get them out in the garden. Okie doke.
Fabulous. Okay, I got some callers on the line, Jerry. Let's try and we'll go to Diana in Mississauga. I've got there. So how are you this morning, Diana?
Fine. How are you guys doing?
We're well. We're well. Are you the snow in my place is blowing right past your place, I think, yeah?
Yeah, it is, and it's got piled up on one side of the driveway. Thanks very much.
What do you got for us this morning, Diana?
Well, Charlie, I've got a really just quick question, but I have a couple of cedar trees on the side of my house which have been happily growing for about 23 years. So they've gotten quite tall, and recently the squirrels have decided to use it as a launching pad for getting onto the roof. So now we sort of said, well, we don't really want that many squirrels sort of bugging around up there, so we want to bring it down to under the eaves so that they can't do that anymore. I'm just wondering, in terms of timing, like the tree, I would say, well, it's above the roof, right? So I don't know. I recall you saying that you can cut up to a third of a plant. So is that true with the cedars? And what would be the best timing for that?
Mm-hmm. Right. So roughly how tall are they now?
Oh, gosh. They've got to be...
I assume you're 20. In a bungalow. Are you in a bungalow?
No, we're in a two-story.
Oh, and above the roof. Wow, so they're tall.
Yeah.
So they're like 25 feet or thereabouts tall.
Yeah.
And, well, so the problem with taking a third off of a cedar, an old cedar like that, is, I mean, it technically should work. I mean, you'd have to go up on ladders, obviously, to do this. And the best time to do it when is in the spring, like mid to late spring. I would suggest maybe late May, early June, mid-June, depending on the spring. And the idea is that when you take them off, it's going to be shocking for the plant, because that's quite a chunk of plant to take away.
Yeah.
But the only reason I'm suggesting you can get away with this is because nobody's going to see that blunt top cut off. Like, nobody's going to be looking down onto that. It isn't a good thing to have squirrels making a home around your roof or your home like that, because squirrels can really get into nooks and crannies. They'll peel off shingles. They'll get into your attic. They're just real. They can be a real pest. I mean, they don't call them rodents with long tails for nothing. So, beware of not allowing the squirrels to make your roof their fun place. So, yeah, I think that that's either that, or I would remove the cedars. I mean, if you love them, they do get too old and gnarly at some point. So you're probably going to have to take them out at some point, just because they won't be doing you any favors whatsoever.
Yeah, they still look great. That's the problem. And I thought about taking them out, but I thought, oh, gosh, it took them so long to get so tall and they look so nice.
Yeah. Now, when you take the tops off, you will cause the plants to get wider. So recognize that. So when you're taking the tops off, be prepared to do some shearing of the sides.
Right, right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana. Mm-hmm. Great. That's like every time I get a haircut, I think I'm going to risk getting a little wider down below. So I got to be careful. So we got to take a quick break, but we'll be back with some more callers.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I am Dean Holland. And Charlie, I got to tell you, I think we should plan for a special episode all about squirrels on The Garden Show. I have heard some great stories and problematic things about squirrels since being on the show.
I know. And funny ways to try and keep them off your feeders and your roof and everywhere else.
Indeed. We have some callers on the line, and we do because they have called one of these two numbers, 416-360-0740 in Toronto or anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, I got a first-time caller on the line. We're going to go to talk to Donna in Toronto. How are you this morning, Donna?
Very well. Thank you.
Good. You get your first-time caller wings. There you go.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Hey. I feel lighter.
What do you got for Charlie there?
Hi, Charlie and Dean. I'm an allotment gardener in High Park. And last year we had such a terrible infestation of gypsy moth and other critters that I'm wondering what the life cycle of the gypsy moth is and if it's going to be as bad this year.
Great question. The life cycle of the gypsy moth, right now, gypsy moth eggs are fast asleep, all tucked into their little beds, all over High Park, in the nooks and crannies of the old bark, in those little recesses, the cracks in the bark, also on people's homes, in between the bricks. They'll tuck their eggs into the mortar, and then any one egg case has 100, 200 eggs, and then the whole egg mass is covered with what looks like sand. It's a very sort of a taupe or beige colored coating that the gypsy moth covers the eggs with. So that's how you spot them now. You spot them by those egg cases that are encased in this kind of sandy, muddy looking light brown layer. And you'll find them, like I said, in cracks and crannies of bark and cracks and crannies on your homes. And I highly, highly recommend, if you're not out counting birds today, or maybe while you're counting birds today, can look for gypsy moth egg cases and have a little tool with you. It doesn't have to be anything too fancy. Something that they're very stuck in there. So you need kind of a sharp, even like a fork would work, because you don't want to damage either the brick or the tree, but you want to dig out that egg mass, preferably drop it into something where you can take it home and throw it, and you can flush the whole thing down the toilet. Worst case, you do just basically open up that egg case, and then the eggs will die. But yes, indeed, they are waiting until the weather gets a little nicer, and you know that's not far off. So that's a really great outing for all of us, is look for those egg cases and scrape them, open them up.
Yes, it was so devastating last year that it was even attacking blackberries and roses.
I know. They were all over my blue spruce. They were all over every maple in my neighborhood. Yes, they were very, very hungry and very effective at causing huge devastation.
Yes, so we can sort of expect it again this spring.
Well, the thing with any insect is they're very cyclical in their populations. So we've had two peak years. So 2021 and 20 were both sort of record-breaking years in the GTA and sort of Southern Ontario. So I haven't sort of stayed on top of what the prognosticators are saying, whether it will be as bad or not quite as bad. But the point is, there will still be gypsy moths out there. So the thing to do is just be prepared. And remember, the BTK, I believe it was, BT is for Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a bacteria in a bottle. And that was very effective, sprayed on the trees that clearly were infested.
Yeah, well, the Parks Department didn't seem to pay any notice to it at all. And we lost, I would say, 90% of our leaves.
Right. So the Parks and Rec people have this really fine line that they tread, trying to do a cost-benefit analysis. Because remember, when you kill all those gypsy moth caterpillars, you're also taking a lot of food away from the birds and the baby birds, because the fledglings are just coming out at that point. So like baby robins and all the insect eaters. So when you wipe out every gypsy moth caterpillar, you wipe out a lot of bird food.
Oh, so they do have a predator.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Birds love them. And totally.
Well, at least that's one good thing.
Right. So that, I mean, I feel sorry for the parks people because, like I say, there's cost. There's always an economic cost of spraying and not spraying. And the trees, of course, in the High Park area are very large, very old, big oaks, like really great, beautiful oaks. And I know I've seen them. They've just been defoliated by the gypsy moths for a number of years, which ultimately will weaken the trees to the point of death.
Yes. Well, we've lost so many oaks.
Good luck on that, Donna.
Oh, thank you.
Keep us posted in the spring. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're going to Mississauga now, Charlie. We have Mary on the line, and good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning. I enjoy your show every week, both of you. I had a beautiful bromeliad flower 2 years ago, and it died. I have two lovely stems, whatever. Will I get a bloom again on that, or what can I do with it?
Right, so your original plant died, but two little baby plants grew off the side of it, obviously.
I guess so. They look healthy, yes. And I'm watering it. I'm watering the cups most often.
Okay. Yeah, and of course, with your sharp scissors, always cut out any of the brown or the really dead stuff that was from the mother plant, and then these are two daughter plants growing in the same pot.
Okay,
you could, if you want, separate them into two separate pots. Excuse me, but for now, enjoy them. Eventually, you will get blooms if you can provide the right conditions. So room temperature, water, as you recognize, preferably that has sat out for at least 24 hours, just to try and evaporate some of the additives from the water. You want the chlorine and the fluorides and those kinds of things, preferably minimized in the water that goes into the cup of the bromeliad.
Okay.
And make sure it is room temperature. And make sure the plant is in the brightest spot you have. You want a nice sunny location, bright window, not right in a cold spot. It's a tropical. It wants warmth. It doesn't want hot air blowing on it.
Okay.
But it does want warmth and it does want brightness. So, and a mister, if you missed it every couple of days, again, that's going to raise the humidity around the plant and water will trickle down into the rosette leaves as well. So yeah, just keep doing that, and eventually, you know, call me in 6 months if it's still not blooming, because there's some tips.
So I could move it to the east window then, I guess, eh?
If you have a west or a south, it would be even better.
Oh, okay.
But east is fine. East is okay, too.
Okay, thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Mary.
Thank you.
Quick question, Charlie. You mentioned water. So in the spring and summer months, is it maybe better to use rainwater?
Absolutely. It's always better. Rainwater's the best.
Okay, so then in that line of thinking, then in the winter, can I just bring in like a handful of snow and let that defrost and then put that in as the water?
Yeah, but bring in more than a handful. Bring in a couple of pails, because once it thaws, it's only a tiny bit of water. But, I know people that actually, you know, they have rain barrels. And, of course, in the fall, the rain barrels are full and then we don't need the water. And they'll empty their rain barrels into pails, take the pails down to the basement, and then use that water all winter to water their houseplants.
Okay. Yeah, I have a rain barrel, but I did. I emptied it for the winter and sort of blocked it off so it wouldn't freeze up and break. And we're going to London now. We've got Tom on the line, and good morning, Tom. I hope this morning is finding you well.
Oh, it is. Yes, it is. A little chilly, but yes.
Yeah. Indeed. What do you got for Charlie there, Tom?
Well, in the fall, I purchased a few hundred spring bulbs, and as life would have it, I had open heart surgery in October. So I didn't get the bulbs into the ground, and they're sitting on my workbench in the garage, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions as to whether I should bother or what.
Yeah, a few hundred is quite a lot. So is your garage insulated? Are these bulbs still alive, or are they mush?
No, they're still alive.
So they're firm?
Yes.
If you went out and felt them right now, they'd be nice and firm?
Yes.
And are they little tiny like crocuses, or are they tulips, or what are they? Are they a mix?
Exactly, both. Crocus and tulips and assorted garlic, this, that, and the other thing.
Now, the garlic, the best time to plant garlic, of course, is in the fall, but it's not the end of the world if you missed the fall. You can plant garlic in the spring. You won't get as big of a harvest because you'll be harvesting in the summer, like in August, so it'll have a shorter growing life. But at the same time, you can, you know, can always get some garlic into the ground in the spring. The other bulbs, it's a bit of a challenge. Right off the top of the show, we were answering an email from somebody who had a bag of bulbs. And in that case, I said, pot them up and let them grow in that pot for now. With or without flowers, they're going to stay alive if you can get them into some soil. But if you've got a few hundred, unless you've got, you know, a nice big something to plant them into, the main thing is you want them under some soil so they can grow. And the reason you want them to grow is because even if you don't get flowers, you'll get leaves. And when you get leaves from your bulbs, then you have photosynthesis and you have the bulbs being replenished for the next year. So, Tom, bottom line is those bulbs will not be able to ever be planted as an indoor forest bulb, other than if you can get them into some soil now and encourage green growth. You may not get flowers, but at least you'll get green growth. And then next spring or summer, out into the garden.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I wish there was a better answer. But, you know, you spent some money on them. So try and keep them alive between now and when you can get them out into the ground with green leaves and not turning to mush or shriveling up.
Okay. Sounds like – thanks, Tom. Sounds like Tom could go out and get a whole lot of pots and do a whole lot of spring gifts for all of his friends. All sorts of forced balls.
A lot of work, though.
A lot of work, indeed. Let's jump over to we got Harriet in Toronto. Yeah, let's talk to Harriet. How are you this morning, Harriet?
Good, thank you. And you guys?
We are well.
Morning.
I want to ask some more about the bromeliad plant. I also had one, and the cups died, and I just cut them down. But I don't have any babies on the side. Is there any chance of getting them?
So what is in your pot right now?
It, the, is the green, this green, green leaves.
Okay. So the green, okay, so what you cut down was the flower when the flower was finished? And what's
I
left
guess,
is
I just
the,
cut it after, I just cut it because it had just a couple weeks ago.
Right, because the flower went all crispy, right?
Yes.
Right, so so what you've got is you still got the mother plant looking good and healthy and green. The flower is done and has been removed. And so what you'll do is continue to care for it as you have been. So bright, sunny location, mist it daily, water from it, you know, into the inside with room temperature water. And at some point, some daughter plants or pups, depending on what you want to call them, will start to grow at off the stem of that mother plant down at soil level. You'll start to see some they'll grow from between the leaves. So that'll take some time. Let that happen as it will. And strangely enough, I had one of my bromeliads rebloom, which I did not expect. I always think of them as a single blooming plant. They die when they finish blooming. Daughters come from the mother. But in my case, not only do I have daughters from the mother, but I have a second bloom from the mother plant, which, like I say, is very odd. So you never know what's going to happen. Just continue the care you've been doing. Don't mess around with things like fertilizer. They just want nice room temperature, like nice, preferably rainwater, like Dean was saying.
Okay. I don't have rainwater, but I leave the water out for...
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you so much for your call, Harriet. Appreciate that. Charlie, a quick question. My amaryllis bulb has finished. And remember, I got two blooms from it, which is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. My wife, Gail, was asking me the other day. So she, you know, brought it off the mantle. It's now on the kitchen counter. She says, do we just toss this now? And I said, you know what? I think I can, like, re-photosynthesis it or put it outside. I can't remember. I said, I need to ask Charlie.
So isn't that the one that's in gravel in a vase with water?
Yeah.
Right. So
So the bulb's looking a little shrivelly now, right? It's lost. So I'm not sure what to do with it.
Right. So it's lost. The reason it's shriveled and it's shrunk is because it used all that energy that was inside the bulb to grow those beautiful flowers.
Right.
So there's no question. The amaryllis bulbs will shrink by as much as a third after they flowered. But are you seeing green leaves coming out of that bulb?
There's still green leaves, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, yes, indeed. My impulse would be, it's going to be a little tricky to stay on top of the right watering with that plant for the next, 10 years. So my impulse would be to put it in a pot and let it grow. It's going to be a greenhouse plant right now. So if you do put it in a pot with soil, make sure about the top third of the bulb is sticking out of the soil.
Okay.
And you may need to trim some roots because it might be so many roots there that it won't fit in the pot. They do like to be under, they want to be in a small pot. So you want to get a pot that's just slightly, well, in this case, since your bulb has shrunk, you're going to want maybe a 6-inch pot, maybe a 7-inch pot at the biggest for that bulb.
Okay.
Or leave it in the vase with water, but let it be a green plant. And as you let it grow and the green leaves grow and it gets bigger and bigger and messier and floppier and all that stuff, those green leaves are fattening up the bulb. Once we're frost free, I put the bulb and the pot or the bulb and the vase outside, eastern location, so morning sun, just leave it in the pot, whatever you've got it in, and enjoy it as a green plant outside all summer. And then we'll talk in August about what to do then.
Sweet. It'll be one of my experiments this year.
There you go.
Gotcha. Okay, we have to take a quick break and then we'll get back to some more emails and callers.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, welcome back to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. Yes, indeed, those numbers again, calling in for anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario. It is indeed a toll-free call, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, I have an email that came in a little while ago, actually, from Doreen, who received a gift from her son. It was a key lime tree. And she already has things like a grapefruit and a lemon and a fig, and so he thought that this lime tree that needed a little bit of attention was going to be in good hands with her. Said something about the some spots on the leaves, which is apparently how the nursery suggested that it came. Recommended ISD second treatment was past due. 90% of the leaves had already fallen. She's asking, is this deciduous? Most of the blossoms have fallen. There were a few new leaves on the branches. Tried watering twice to keep it moist as recommended. Leaves were just falling off green. So she's kind of wondering what to do.
Right. It's not easy. It's not easy to grow any citrus inside. Our homes in the winter tend to be just a little too low of humidity. These are plants that want to be in places like Florida where, you know, it's consistently mild, but also there's a much higher water moisture in the air. So what are you going to do? One of the things I did learn about even a dwarf lime tree becomes a very large tree. So, I mean, outside in the real world of gardening in the ground, even a dwarf lime tree can get up to 10 feet tall. So that's just something to keep in mind when you've got a lime tree in a pot inside your house. It does want to get to be a pretty large tree. So a couple of things to keep in mind. She did send a photograph, Doreen did, and the pot, because it was a gift, and this happens quite often where the supplier of this plant has wrapped the pot in a decorative plastic wrap with usually some ribbons and bows, elastic, something like that, to cover up kind of the ugly grower's pot and make it look more festive. So right away, whenever a plant comes into your home with plastic wrapping around it, get it off, because you want drainage. You do not want to water a plant, have the water go through the drainage holes, and then sit in that plastic wrapping around the pot. You want that water to be able to drain away into a saucer, and then within an hour or so, you dump out any water that's still in the saucer. So right away, get the plastic wrap away, because drainage is super important for all citrus plants. Avoid drafts. I've said this before, no hot, no cold drafts, whether it's near a window, near a vent. We like windows for their brightness, but we don't like windows because they always have hot air ducts right close to them. So make sure you've got a vent deflector to keep that warm, hot air that's blowing out of your furnace from blowing onto your plants. When you're watering, water carefully. You do want the plants to, in the winter, to dry down fairly thoroughly. In the summer, they'll take much more water. But in the winter, we dry down between watering. So you've got to really get out a moisture meter, stick your fingers in the soil, find out what that pot should weigh when it's wet versus dry. Fertilizing is certainly something that is considered appropriate, because citrus plants don't typically have a dormant period. They want to grow year round. So a flowering plant fertilizer, 15, 30, 15, or any kind of a Blooms Plus kind of fertilizer, mixed up according to directions, only used once a month at the most. And as I mentioned, less water in the winter and lower temperatures in the winter for citrus plant. You want to give them Florida. So what's Florida? 10 degrees, roughly 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, you don't want, it's not a rainforest, a tropical rainforest kind of plant. It's not a desert plant. It's a very much of a grow in Florida, nowhere near the Everglades kind of plant. Do take it out in the winter. If you have any citrus plants in your collection, outside for the summer, lots of sun, lots of humidity, loves the humidity, and keep the mist on the plant in the winter year round. Misting is great. Increase your humidity with misting. And, you know, I keep recommending this, and I actually did it the other day for, I have a plant called a rabbit's foot fern. So rabbit's foot ferns are kind of neat because it's a fern, but the roots are furry, like a little rabbit's foot. So, and the roots grow up on the surface of the soil and encase the pot. And they're really funny, odd looking plants, but they love humidity. So I made a pebble tray. I got a tray, I put pebbles, water, and I'm keeping water in that pebble tray, and the plants are sitting up on top of the pebbles, and the plants are looking happier since I provided them the pebble tray. So just everybody should consider that if plants are looking a bit peaked in the winter.
Excellent. Okay, got to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with some callers on the line.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we are back, and I have Dave on the line. He is calling from Coburg. How are you this morning, Dave?
Hey, not bad at all, thanks.
Good. What have you got there for Charlie, my friend?
I've got problems with growing seeds.
Hmm. What are you trying to grow?
Well, I'm trying to grow onions, Alicante, Globo, pansies, impatiens, begonia, and none of them will grow. I've got them started in a sun-grow ProMix.
Okay.
And some of the, like the onion seeds I planted, or I started them between Christmas and the New Year, because they're big onions and they take a long time to grow. But they're not growing.
Did they germinate, the onion seeds?
They're not germinating at all. They're still sitting there. They won't even look out the ground at me.
Okay. All right. So, you know, we could do a whole seminar on starting seeds, but just in a nutshell, start your seeds in a seed starting mix, which will be a package you buy at your local garden center. It's very similar to a regular potting mix. The difference is that a seed starting mix is a finer, it's been ground up finer, so there's no big chunks, so the seeds don't have to fight with getting past little pieces of logs, etc. So seed starting mix, number one. Number two, most seeds will germinate faster if they have heat from below or they're in a warm location. There are seed starting mats, so it's literally like a warming pad, heating pad that goes on. Pardon?
They're on a mat.
They are.
I've seen them on the mat now. So, like some of the seeds I've had in for 4 to 6 weeks on the growing mat, and they won't grow. I put some on top of the fridge in the same mix. Now, my latest idea is to grow them in vermiculite. So I've got some growing in vermiculite.
Okay, well, I wouldn't grow seeds in straight vermiculite. You can grow cuttings in vermiculite, but vermiculite has no nutritional value. It'll be it'd be hard to transplant seedlings from vermiculite into actual soil. I would start them in soil or little peat pots or something like that.
Yep.
But different seeds have different requirements. Like pansies are a good example of plants that need a cool temperature versus onions, which need a warm temperature. As well, it is a bit early. It is only the third week of February. So if you are starting to grow seeds now, it depends, right? Again, geraniums, begonias, you're right. Those seeds are planted back at Christmas. Whereas tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, we don't plant those for a few more weeks. Like those, it'll be another 3 or 4 weeks before we start the seeds.
Yeah.
The little seedlings will just struggle inside our homes if we start them too early. So it's more a question. So you've got them heat from below. You've got, this is clean, sterile, right out of the package soil, I assume.
Yeah.
And you're just having trouble. And how old are the seeds? Are they all fresh seeds?
They're all fresh. Yeah. One of the onion seeds, the last date was last year. So, I mean, a percentage of them won't grow, but a few will. And I don't need hundreds of seeds.
No. And I mean, you could. About 18 of the big onions. So these fresh seeds. Yeah, you just bought these seeds this year. Like they have dates on the packages, I assume.
Yeah.
Because some seeds do not hold well. All right. Well, okay. It sounds to me like you're doing the right things. When you've got these seeds in the moist soil, in the warm location, you have some kind of a cover, a humidity cover, piece of saran wrap, anything like that over top of the seed flats?
Yeah, they're in a clear plastic bag, actually, each set of each box.
Okay, but you're going to have to open that. Don't seal that up. We need that gas exchange, so you need that oxygen, carbon dioxide exchange, so don't leave them sealed up in a plastic bag.
Okay, I'm on a well. That doesn't make any difference.
Shouldn't. I mean, you're right, wells come with minerals, but generally speaking, they're not toxic to plants.
Okay, I've thought about going outside and getting some snow and melting that and putting that on it.
What do you drink at your place? Do you buy water?
Well water. No, well water.
Okay, so you drink the well water?
Fine.
It's fine for you. It's fine for the plants.
Sorry?
If the well water is healthy for you, it'll be fine for the plants.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm still surviving on it. I've been on it for a few years now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm on a well as well, but we, no pun intended, but we do have water filtration system at my place. So I do not give the softened water to my plants. I give clean, clear, reverse osmosis water to my plants. So I don't want to give them salt because soft water has salt in it. So unless you're softening your water, do not water your plants with that.
Okay. Well, I always take the water out of the basement and that straight off the well.
Exactly.
So
okay, right, thank you so much for the call there, Dave.
Good luck with that. That's a hard
one. Okay, let's jump to Marguerite in Toronto. Let's just see if she's got a nice quick question for us because we only have a very short amount of time left. Good morning, Marguerite.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Oh.
And maybe we've lost Marguerite. Okay, let's jump to Francesca. Francesca in Woodbridge, how are you this morning, hon? Francesca? And there we go. Okay. Oh, well.
I can tell how popular we are.
Here we are. Speaking of little seedlings, I sent you a little picture this morning because I had I have a little herb kit that I got from my father-in-law at Christmas, and I planted it, about a month after Christmas. Mm-hmm. But, I've got all my little shoots coming up. I got my sage and my cilantro and my – I think I've got some I got some parsley in there, some other things. Yeah.
I know. And I looked at that. And I thought, oh, you're going to regret planting that so early.
Am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be for me. It was supposed to be like a winter thing. The whole idea is have herbs all year round, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. So I shouldn't be so quick to say you're going to regret that because most of them probably won't make it out to your garden, but some might. Like sage is pretty tough. It might. Just make sure you're giving lots of light. Because our windows have all this UV protection and it can be quite challenging to get sufficient light onto plants, little seedlings particularly, at this time of year.
Okay, I do have it in the south window and I've kept the dome on, which has holes in it for that, you know, that exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide, as you said. But I was wondering, now that they're started, should I keep the lid off or should I keep that dome on?
No, keep the dome off. And I'm looking, you sent me a picture. It looks like there's little bits of gravel in there.
Yeah, it came with a kit. It was just, I don't know why. It just came with a little bag of rocks, supposed to make it look pretty, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. Okay. All right. Bizarre. Well, looking at your picture, you can see that the stems are pale. You want green stems, not white stems. So the more light, the better.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Thank you for that. And yeah, we are going to have to talk lots more about starting seeds. There's no question. A lot of people are pretty keen to get on to seed starting. We're all itching to get our hands in the dirt as well. So do your best. Resist the urge. Do not start your seeds too early. Anticipate your last frost date and count back from there. I'm not starting any seeds here for another 3 weeks. And then I'm all in on the seed business. And I'll certainly keep everybody tuned in on what I'm doing. Thank you, Carlos. Thank you, Dean. You guys are great. Couldn't do any of this without you. Callers, emailers, same thing. Couldn't do it without you either. So thanks, everybody. Get out there, count some birds. See you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.